This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals.
In this episode, our guest is Greg Dickinson, the CEO of Omidim. It's great to have you on, Greg. How are you doing?
Really good. Thank you all very much for the invite. Looking forward to the conversation.
We're happy to have you here. So let's dive right in. Give us the high-level overview of Omidim and what you guys do. I probably just butchered the name.
You did. That's okay. So that gives me a chance to repeat it. Omidim. And if you're looking to how you remember it, just remember it's my demo spelled backwards. So that really is kind of the way it started. Years ago, I had exited a previous startup and kind of had some, you know, some ideas that, hey, there's got to be a way to automate some of the selling / buying experience. And one of the areas that caused a lot of challenge was the demo, the product experience, the dreaded request a demo button on the website that, you know, everyone clicks on and everyone abandons as soon as that form comes up that says, you know, tell me everything about you so I can harass the hell out of you. So we, you know, kind of starting off our journey with, let's automate that, right? And we thought the best way to do that would be with video, but gosh, no one wants to watch, you know, 90 minutes of video. So how can we make video watchable? Well, you do that by search. So what we do here at Omidim is we take any of your everyday content, sales presentations, demonstrations, positioning documents, whatever you want, you upload them into our platform and they become searchable inside the video, inside the PDF. So that's the technology baseline. And we've used that. We started off very simply with replacing the demo process. And now, you know, after a number of years, a number of customers, we actually are pretty much in the digital sales room space. So that inside that digital room, if you will, is the product experience, is the sales decks. But what makes it fundamentally different is a buyer, and this is what our customers say. I love this quote. A buyer no longer has to sit through a 60-minute presentation hoping their question gets answered, because all they do now is type it in. Show me workflow. Show me reporting. Show me customer reporting. Show me security. Show me onboarding. And it will find the exact moment inside the video or videos, right? So the buyer can engage for 9, 10, 12 minutes and get, you know, hours of information that they would have been through a meeting. So that's how we built the company. We built it, you know, like I said, we started 5 years ago. We had to figure out how to do that. And now that helps the buyer buy, we say, because now they can walk up to a consumer-like experience, get their questions answered. And then we added on to that after about a year or two of being able to capture, just like Google does, right, all that searching. So I'll know what you search for, and I'll know what you watch after that search. And then what you do next is, who else did you invite? And what did they do? What time of day was it, et cetera? 40 different attributes. I won't list them all, but that's all put together and packaged back for the seller. So now the buyer is better educated and the seller is better educated. So when you do finally meet, it's a much more productive meeting, because now you're both, the salesperson doesn't have to go through the high level 50,000 pitch stuff, and the buyer doesn't have to, you know, have to go through that either. Our time is better well spent. And we'll show you that later in the sense of buyer engagement, then sales, getting that digital discovery, as we call it, and then taking action. So according to Gartner, we probably have the most digital sales rooms in production today. You know, that's north of 60,000. So that's a lot of digital sales rooms. And considering that Gartner says this is in the bottom of the first as far as the use of that technology. So anyway, that's the history of Omidim. We're doing well. You can go to our G2 reviews and see that we do very well from salespeople saying, heck, it helped me sell, which is what we're here for, right? You know, Rev Tech is all about Rev and Tech, right? So we're here together to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been so curious about the name. I was like, what does this name mean? So thank you for finally answering that question for me. And I'll try not to butcher it again. So where were you before that this problem needs to be fixed?
Yeah, so I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've done five of them. And the last one was a company called Hypuros. We created third-party management, the compliance problem. And after building that business up from, you know, from zero to 100 and some odd employees, we were acquired by a private equity firm. And, you know, kind of the last 2 years of that, our problem was complex, right? Because of who we were selling to. And We're selling to lawyers or compliance officers that, no disrespect to them, before us, their idea of automation was redline. It was what they did. And so we came in with, well, wait a minute, you have to score these all these third parties with compliance and different kinds of regulations. So long story short, we had to invest a lot in the pre-sales. And I think anyone will admit this, pre-sales is a hard job and your chance of getting all A players is pretty slim, right? But you had to have them because you couldn't tell a prospect, oh, thank you for your inquiry. We'll get back to you in 3 months when we have bandwidth. You had to hire. And sometimes you didn't have the best people being able to do that. So I felt there was a lot of wasted effort and wasted time on that first demo or the first meeting that could be, right, again, to be done with video, but you had to be done right, right? I'm not a big fan of tours. You're not going to catch me going to Costco and having to go through every damn aisle. I'd like to go in, get what I want, and get out, right? So, you know, I think the idea of a video is authentic. It's real. As we tell our customers, if you swear in there, you say damn, darn, leave it. It makes it real. It's what we all do, right? Every occasionally it slips. But anyway, I saw that problem and felt there had to be a way to optimize the good resources, the best resources, to be focused where you want them focused and, you know, help salespeople with the fact that these resources, although they think they're free, are not free, right? And I'm a pre-sales engineer at heart. I started Ariba in 1997. That was my job. And I believe it's an important part of the buying journey of the sales cycle, because at the end of the day, you're buying software. Have you ever bought a car without seeing it, test driving it? Probably not, right? So you're not going to buy software without, you know, kind of you want to drive and you want to be able to play. And sometimes product-led growth doesn't work for every single solitary product, right? And sometimes it's actually a detriment, not a help, because you get lost, confusion, you quit, right? So I honestly moved to South Carolina to kind of retire, and then, you know, in about 3 months realized that, well, I'm not going on the PGA tour and bass fishing's not fun every day. So now what am I going to do? So I said, let me go back to that problem. How do I solve that? And Almond was born.
Yeah, it helps. Kind of, I've said this before. My least favorite thing is to get on that first call with a potential product that I want to buy, and I learn nothing because the salesperson wants to do all their discovery and get through everything. And so this kind of helps both sides of that. It helps the salesperson do that initial discovery. What am I interested in? How to direct the conversation? I don't need to hear about every single thing the product does. I need to hear about the things that solve what I'm trying to do. And it helps me know, what could this do? And does it have the things that I needed to have?
And think about, you know, in some sales cycles, right, it's three buyers, some it's 15 or 16, right? And so wouldn't it be great, and it is great, if every buyer can come in and ask for the questions and get the answers to what's important to them? The tech buyer, the procurement buyer, the business buyer, the compliance buyer, they all have different point of views, different things that they need to know before they can bless, right, this decision. So to your point, it frustrates me to no end. We buy stuff here at Almond M, and I hate when the SDR, BDR gets on the phone. They're very nice and polite. They notice something in your wall and say, oh, Greg, you were in the Air Force, you're that great, blah, blah, blah. By the way, what's the project? Is it budget? Who's the decision maker? And when is it going to go, right? That's what they want. And that's not a very endearing call to me. And fundamentally, right, I could have engaged them with Almond M, and you would have learned a lot more. And there's a stat out there, I think it was published by HubSpot, but you may be wrong, that said that today, with the requested demo and all the gated content, 50% of your buyers disappear, never to come back. And it's all because your internal process is geared towards today. I need to build pipeline today. If the buyer is going to buy 6 or 9 months from now, that's not really interesting to you. And by having all that process set up that way, that buyer, Greg, that may be interested in just learning more now, and in 3 months or 6 months, I'm going to buy when budget's available, you've now shooed me away. And that's just, I hate that. But that's just, you know, that's me being me.
I think it's also bad business. You know, it's when you're rushing your prospects to make a decision, I don't think it's a good way of doing business and selling. You need to ensure that the people are ready to buy. And like you mentioned earlier, this is a journey. And part of the journey is just to explore and get the questions answered. This is a very important part of the process, too big or too important to be neglected, but it's also expensive. The solution engineers, they cost you a lot, right? And it takes a lot of work to prepare someone for this role. So because that's probably going to be the most product knowledgeable person in the selling process. So think about that, right? And the customers will come with a variety of different problems, testing and probing your product, whether they can solve it. So getting these answers, I think it helps. And also sometimes the RFPs are extensive and you don't want to invite provider that actually is not going the right direction, if you know what I mean. Sometimes the RFPs, they have hundreds of questions. And that's just a waste of time, to your point, right? Like, why would I invite someone and I already know that I can't do stuff, right? Yeah, and that's an interesting interim step that probably serves a lot of teams.
Gosh, we could peel that back for 7 hours, right? What you just said, because it's very, very spot on. So I implore people to think for a second, the work at home at, you know, our meeting today started at 9 a.m. At 8 a.m., I was out shopping for something as a consumer at my desk, getting information and buying. Why is it at 9:05 you want me to follow a rigid process? I'm the same person. And I think, you know, the example I always use is I'm fortunate I live on a ranch and we have to often buy things for that ranch, right? And my wife is the one that runs, you know, most of the chickens and the cows and the horses, et cetera. And how she buys is she goes to a place that gives her information for free and educates her and gets her, makes her smarter. And when the day comes that she says, you know, it's time to buy the attachment from the tractor, it's time to go get fertilizer, she goes there 100% of the time. Doesn't shop for price. That person has built up that trust. And so you have the opportunity by using our technology and others, right? There are other technologies out there to build digital trust, right? Allow that person to gain information, gain confidence, learn on their own. To your point, don't force them into a process and kind of rush them. Their boss may have said, go on and look for this. We're going to buy, you know, at the beginning of our next quarter. And I think my wife said, you know, an excellent example that she does that all the time. She goes to the store, asks questions, doesn't buy anything. But when the day comes to buy, it's like a V-line. I always say, right, have you thought those people helped me and I'm going to help them back? And I think, you know, we're all human, right? In B2B, forget, you know, I read an article about a month ago. It said, you know, maybe you should have thinking about B2H. This is the human because, you know, we do spend a lot of money online as consumers. And we do like that experience. At least I do. I just bought a vehicle and I did 90% of it online, went down, test drove a couple of dealerships. And then I bought it. I had everything I needed in front of me. Here's what I want and et cetera, right? I didn't need to go and ask them for a brochure. It's all online. So I think your points are very valid that today in your space of rev tech, need to think about the fact that the buyer is in much more control and has assets too, and technology also to go make the buying decision. Your job should be to help them and not be, oh, I have an MQL goal, so I have to go make everything gated so I get those MQLs. Or, hey, SDR, BDRs, if you don't have 12 phone calls and ask these 16 questions, right? Forget that. Think about, I like your space of rev tech because I personally think, and that's the way O&M is aligned, everyone is aligned to revenue. There's no silo. There's no, oh, your goal is X and hand it off to Y. It's, hey, our goal is to help that customer be successful, right? And that not only in the initial sale, but the rollout, the metrics, the benchmarking, and everyone contribute. We call it COGS, right? We have a customer obsessed group. That's how we're organized across that customer, and everyone in that group, regardless of quote unquote their field of expertise, right, is there to ensure that customer gets value from the first time they talk to us until, you know, all the way through to support, use cases, et cetera. I just think that's where companies that look at it that way, a rev tech perspective, are the winners, right?
Yeah.
I hope it's not lost to anyone that there was a company called Blockbuster one day that thought stores were here forever. Yeah. And if you watch the documentary, Blockbuster was going to buy Netflix, and Netflix thought they were never going to be able to compete with that. And someone said, no, forget this digital thing. Let's just keep going with the stores. We own them. That's our asset. Buyers love coming in, standing in line, getting tapes that are not rewind, et cetera. They love that. And lo and behold, Blockbuster, I think the last one's in Alaska. There's one left, right?
Yeah.
That was a $1 billion corporation. Barnes & Noble, same thing. Uber came in and said, it's the same product, right? A yellow cab and a driver, but the buying experience of Uber is so much better.
It gives the customer all the information up front.
And it's transparent. The biggest fear of a taxi is you get in the back seat and they're going to take you on a ride. You know, to increase the size of the fare. Uber makes it transparent, and so does a digital sales room, whether it's ours or somebody else's. It allows that buyer to learn on their own and see, What about scalability? What about support? What about pricing? What about the product? Anyway, so we, like I said, we could do this for 7 hours, but I know your time is limited. Mine's available.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good, we're talking like very broadly about consumer goods, right? And the things that we buy in our everyday life. And it's worth a seller or organization to think about that and when they're selling B2B. This is, to your point, we're the same people and we think it's like, it's different and we got to do it this way. No, it's the same thing. You're selling to the same human. And so what can we learn from the consumer world, the places that do it really well?
And I think the big takeaway that we always say is that 20 years ago, if I wanted to learn anything about a company, any company, I had to talk. They had all the information. Everything was in their control. They had to email it to me or send it, or heck, go to Kinko's, print it, and bring it to me, right? That's what it was. Today, that's not the case. I can go on the web and learn a boatload about anyone, any company. And so remember that when someone is selling to you, you no longer own and you no longer have the, you know, the old solution selling. Well, Lizzie, if you don't do this, I'm not going to give you this. Well, Lizzie will just go somewhere else. Like, she can get the information. So the internet's a two-sided street, by the way. If we can find out things about prospects, prospects can learn about buyer, about sell. So
let's dive into the demo.
Okay. So what you're looking at now on your screen, we're starting at the end. We built Omidem from the buyer's perspective. So this is a walk-up user interface. This company called Omidem is selling to a company called Salesforce. Here's the sales team. And what I put in front of them is, hey, welcome and introduction, right? Using video to introduce myself. People still buy from people. But this buyer can now come in and look at some recommendations, right? No different than what Google does or Yahoo or any other tools where they put information in front of you. I like to say stuff in the ballot box. These are the questions I want you to ask. Welcome to Omidem. Can I watch a demo? Why Omidem, right? So these are all recommended content available on the landing page that any buyer can click on. I won't do it because of time today. But the second way a buyer can learn about your products is by looking at these topics that are automatically created and captured when we ingest your everyday content, your demo or your sales pages. So the buyer may come on and say, you know, I'm interested in customer success. So by clicking on customer success, this is going to search in and across all of the available digital assets in this portal. Look, at the 2 minute mark, I'm talking about customer success. In a different presentation at the 48 second mark, the same presentation at the 4 minute mark, and the third one at the 3 minute mark. So what does this do? This allows the buyer or buyers, right? Different buyers, to be able to get their questions answered. And once they have done the recommended, and they've looked at the particular topics, they come and ask a question. You know, what about onboarding, right? Whatever. Or what about a sales solution? Now, this buyer can come in here and ask questions and find the answers to their questions. Why was that powerful? Because you never go to Google and search for anything you're not interested in. So what I've done is I've allowed a buyer, multiple buyers, to come in and get the questions they want. When one of our customers says, I think is ultimately powerful is, I don't sit through 60 minutes hoping you answer my question. Think about webinar content, right? How much of that is available today? Put it in the portal. Let the buyer come back in later and ask questions on that. So high level, tons of other features and functions in here, but this is the front end, allows a buyer to walk up. It's secure, it's private. So you'll notice that, you know, companies will put proposals in here, things that are PII, but it's secure and private, invite only, buyer courting. Now, phase two of that is, I'm a seller. This is the back end of the application. Here are all the opportunities, fictitiously, of course, that I'm working on, right? And I immediately, as a salesperson, inside sales, solution engineer, know my Salesforce opportunity. I've had 46 visits. Here's the Omidem score. Oh, a webinar with Legion Technologies, 287, DocuSign introduction. Again, these are all fictitious, just using this as demo content. But this tells your salesperson who's engaged. And if I want to look at what is going on, an hour ago, someone from Salesforce came in. What do they come in for, right? So I can begin to drill in and understand. 1 hour ago, Mark DeLuca. What did Mark do? So this is digital discovery. This is buyer intent. This is insight, because this is Mark's visit 1 hour ago. Mark came and looked at Welcome to Omidem. Omidim introduction, engagement insight, and action demo, and do you have a sales solution? That tells me Mark's probably in sales. He looked at the sales solution. Let me look at the timeline of what Mark did in what order. This gives me every morsel of information that Mark did, because this is where the digital discovery and the pattern recognition begins to come in. And I want to point out one other thing real quick from this perspective is that at the opportunity level, right, the sales force, this whole thing, I can look at the summary or the combined information. So all the visitors, what content do they look at? Which is the most important to them? Well, you have a sales solution. How long to create a portal, right? This is all information, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 3 minutes that people looked at, right? And I can, as a salesperson, now I'm smart as heck, right? I understand this company, what are they looking at and why? Salesforce, and why are they looking at my content? And then last but not least is where search comes in, right? So this is all the topics people search for by typing them in. I'm going to look here to see, are there any topics that they search for that we didn't have an answer for? Ooh, GDPR, compliance, security. Could go into a lot of detail here, but why did I point that out? Because now the third leg of the stool, we showed you a moment ago, engagement. Then we showed you, this is what we call insight, right? What the buyer is doing and telling the salesperson what to do next. But now, as a salesperson, I can go, I'm going to show you this portal one more time. Look at it. This is how it looked a moment ago. But now the deal has progressed. The opportunity is moving forward. Or I found some questions that I didn't have information for. As a salesperson, I'm going to go ahead now and add a technical demo because they asked about Salesforce integration. I'm going to add our security document to this portal because there was some security and compliance. Watch this. I got to refresh my browser so we get the freshest content. But now look, as a part of the pursuit team, as a solution engineer, I've now moved the deal forward digitally. We call that action. So there was an engagement. I learned something about that engagement, and now I took action in order to move this deal forward. And later on, it could be I recorded the meeting on June 1st. I want to add that. Or, oh, they asked me for a proof of concept. So we built that, and let's share that now with the buying team. So again, as the deal progresses, or as there are information that this particular buyer is looking for, I can share it in a digital way, make them aware of that, and continue to progress this deal, because we think today B2B is a digital and human experience, not digital then human, not digital or human. It's digital and human. How do you bring them both together to help the buyer buy and help the seller sell? So that, I think that's inside our time limit here for a demo. I hope that helps everyone from understanding at a high level what Omidim does and how we help you go to market.
That definitely is helping. I think a couple of things I noticed here, that on the one hand, you have this search ability that you mentioned before, right? And that functionality helps because you're looking for the things that really relate to you or your team or your department, or you're simply interested and you know it's going to be a problem or was a problem with the previous vendor that was in the space. But what I really like is that you're tracking all the phrases that actually you didn't have a content. So, you know, most of the tools in the space, they're tracking everything, what is out there, and they don't really tell you what you were missing.
Exactly.
But in your case, you know, you're tracking it because it's easier, right? People just typing in, they're using search. So
you do,
if they
right?
couldn't find it, there's no phrase that matches that, or they were not able to click through something, I mean, there you go. It's a record. And I think it's helping to improve the selling process. But my question for you is, how do you recommend your customers, first of all, create this content, right? What you think is engaging? What is really helping them to consume more of that multimedia, whatever that is, right? Because it's not only slides, right? It's a lot of things.
Yeah.
And also, where's the tipping point where they should start contacting the prospect or the customer after the consumption? Is it, I don't know, two videos, two people out of the buying committee, decision maker maybe? You know, it's what is your take on this, how they should follow up on this information, and what's the right timing and moment to do so?
So, I want to go back to your first statement about the search and not finding things first. And I want to admit that we learned, I'm being honest here, that I didn't think about this when I built Omidim, is that
that search also increases the deal size. And it's because, think about yourself, right? I go in to buy a truck, I'm going to buy trim package B, and then I start seeing the moonroof and the new screen and the truck cover, and all of a sudden I'm on the Platinum Edition, right? That's what happens in the opening portal. You come in thinking I'm going to buy a Salesforce solution. Next thing you know, you're like, well, what's this Parrot thing? Cool, campaign management. That's interesting. And we see it across our customers. When an opening portal is engaged in an opportunity, that deal is bigger than when it's not, right? So I think search has a lot to do with that. If you go to Google and start searching for things, right? Sometimes, I'm guilty, I get down a rabbit hole of things that, holy mackerel, I really don't need to learn that day, but I get in. So to answer your question on the use of the product around go-to-market, right? So we have customers that start off on the website, right? So instead of request a demo, they can ungated, right, or gated, allow that suspect, right, to begin to learn. Those customers score that, and they have their own, you know, kind of knowledge of how long or how much did that suspect consume before we're going to, you know, reach out to them, right? We have other customers that start right off with a portal and don't use a website. And there, just being honest, right, we don't advise them to use us for prospecting in the sense of sending out a blind email with a link in it. No one's going to click that link. I mean, if someone's telling you they will, they're BSing, right? I mean, I won't. I get them all the time from, you know, trying to spam. So what our customers tell us is that when they've used their other tools that they have, right, websites and emails and all these other ways and webinars and, you know, services like yours to help people get interested in your product, then they most of the time will create a secure private portal like I showed you ahead of the first meeting. And that allows, first of all, a couple of things. One is you got them on the phone or you sent them an email and they said, yeah, I'm interested, right? And then you say, okay, cool, I got your email address. Now what I'm going to do, Lizzie, is I'm going to send you an invite to a private secure portal so you can learn more about Omid. Lizzie, oh, that's pretty cool. I sent it to her. She doesn't go in. And that tells me a lot, right? Maybe she just wanted to give me off the phone a little while ago. She does go in, right? That tells me something else, right? She invites other people in that portal. She invites her teammate. Now the buying team begins to materialize in front of my eyes. So then what we find is they have a meeting, right? We're not here to say there's no meeting, there's no sales, but they use a portal prior to the meeting, 2 weeks out. They get some information. Yeah. The buyer gets some information. The meeting's more pointed. And then, right, they use that on a continuous basis, right, from that going forward. So the second question you asked was, well, you know, how do they do it, right? How do they create the content, right? And that's where, you know, we're big advocates on this, what we call everyday content. This meeting right here is everyday content. It happened. It transpired. It recorded. It uploaded into a portal, and it becomes valuable information, right, about Owen, right, in this case, webinars. Or, you know, we've got customers, and they ask us, they're brand new, where do we get started? What are the 10 most common questions based on where you want to target the funnel that a prospect asks? You all know, right? They don't know what they can ask and they rattle them off in 10 seconds. Do those. Whether that's a PowerPoint deck that you're going to walk someone through, right? High-level sales pitch, elevator pitch, message. Whether it's the high-level overview demo. Doesn't matter. You want to create 3 minutes, 6 minutes, 60 minutes. We know one customer has a four-hour presentation that they did a customer thing. It's all in Omid. Why is that every day? Because you record it and upload it, and now it's searchable. So I don't need to break it down into, you know, that old rule that says YouTube has published it. The average watch time of video is 2 minutes and 20 seconds. But if I have an hour-long video and you search for workflow and it happens to be at the 40-minute mark, I don't have to watch all 40 seconds. So we say pick the 10 questions. And then once they get that done, right, that's enough on the website or enough to create that portal. Lots of customers say what really makes Omid powerful for us is out of the 10 questions, 5 are the same per vertical, 5 are different per vertical. So let's go ahead and create those. And now we have a template in Omid for our fin services, our pharma, and our, you know, CPG space. What's better if you're a prospect? Well, let me do it this way, because I'm guilty of this sometimes in the old days. Of you being in front of a pharma company and saying, you know, if you were a bank, this would really look good. They're like, well, I'm not a bank. But you as a pre-sales engineer didn't have time to customize every single demo because oftentimes you're being rushed to go out and meet with that prospect. We call it show up and throw up demos, right? So this eliminates that. This allows that that company to say, yeah, we have a really good message for Fin Services and pharma and CPG. Let's use the introductory demo. So you'll find that there is a finite number of questions, right? It's not infinite about your product, your company. So do 10. You'll do a portal and they'll ask three questions. Salesforce integration. Oh, shoot, we didn't think about that. Boom, that's question number 11. What about integration? That's a new video. It's uploaded to Obidin. It's now available across every damn portal you have if you want it to be. That, you know, a week later, you guys support Drift. Boom, there's another one, right? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now every day, you can go into Omidem, upload the video. You can use a camera like I do a lot as the introductory bit. You know, hey, thanks for the meeting. Really appreciate it. Nice to meet you guys. You had some follow-up questions. I've included those here as follow-up, keeping the ball rolling in the opportunity. You know, so I think that's where we see the most success for our customers is whatever you do, I don't care whose tool you buy, don't boil the ocean. Don't say it's got to be perfect. And the second thing is never, ever, ever make the videos production quality because the buyer immediately knows if it's a slick music, fade in, fade outs, music, all that's not a demo. That's not a sales presentation. When's the last time a salesperson got in front of you and had music yeah. and they faded in and faded out during the presentation? Never. So why do you do that in the video? That turns a buyer off. We've got 100,000 plus buyers, process special customers that we looked at, we measure. And when you put one of those up there, it's watched for like milliseconds and turned off.
Yeah.
No one is coming to your company for entertainment. They have a problem, they want a solution.
Yeah. If you consider the number of TikTok users or YouTube users, I mean, there you go, right? Like you don't have to have any proof that unfiltered videos are really a success story, right? And people like it.
Yeah.
You think about the generations of people that right now are using it. That's pretty clear, right? What I like about this is that you actually bring together, maybe I'm wrong, but I think you bring really close the collaboration between the pre-sales and product marketing. I often seen this, product marketing is not really delivering what it's supposed to. I don't have enough collateral, you know, and so on and so on. And then the marketer comes back and is like, why do you need this? This is not helping you. Go and call the prospect, right? We've seen this, right? So with your tool, there's a black and white proof that, hey, I need this. Look, people really looking for that information. So you can't disregard it anymore. And we don't have it, right? And we know that, you know, that additional person that is looking for that information is on the buying committee. So we better have it. And yeah. To your point, it doesn't have to be a collateral that really is...
polished.
Exactly.
It doesn't have
right?
to be polished.
I don't have to wait for this to go through middlemen that will just make this pretty and put all the whistles on it, right? And it's like, no, it's just put the recording in. It could be, you know, here's our product roadmap, right? I mean, how many times are you getting that question from the customers? Hey, I haven't seen your product roadmap. What is there? Like, what do you, you know where that conversation goes, right? Like, hey, I have another vendor that looks better than you. You better show me, you know, what are you currently working on because I'm not going to renew with you. That's a big time collaboration tool for these two functions.
Yeah.
I lead partnerships, right? And I'm going to be the best at talking about our partnerships and how they work and what's going on with them. And what I do is I go and I train our sales team and hope, dear God, that they do it well. But I know they're not going to do it great because they have to go and present on 25 things. I mean, they have to be an expert on everyone. So now I can just go in and say, hey, let me tell you all about our Shopify integration. I can go deep in it. It's like, I can do it this afternoon. I could do it. Throw it in there. And now if someone wants to learn about that, they just search for that video. And it all this information that comes in it, one tells me what integrations do we need to go build that are coming up over and over again? Yeah. Or what product do we need to add to our roadmap that like it's coming up clearly as opposed to like, you can do this in Gong, but you have to know what to go search for. Like I have to know like what integration might people be looking for that now I can go search for. This is actually like giving you that readout.
Yeah. Bingo. Yeah. I mean, nothing better, right, than being able to scale your entire company. When I worked at Ariba, our CTO was a gentleman by the name of Craig Federighi. Now, Craig happens to be now the SVP of all Apple engineering. So as you would imagine back then, right in the 90s, we wanted him on every deal. Intelligent as hell, incredible presenter, had a great bedside manner, if you will. Craig has a job to go be CTO. How's it get now? Today's world, I could record Craig on this is our roadmap. This is how we scale. This is what makes us better than other solutions from a technical stack perspective. And I can put it in front of every customer. CEO message. Here's our vision. Here's our whatever, right? To your point, we have customers that use us for the partner strategy of having the partner give demos. They're like, gosh, we watch those. They're terrible. Okay. Allow them to use the O&M portals to engage. And then you're putting your best in front of it. And I think you hit the nail on the head with this idea of all that buyer information, much more powerful than a phone call because you're on a portal and you're not afraid of asking a question that is going to embarrass you in front of your boss. Or you don't want to ask a question that would embarrass you in front of your team of going, gosh, why didn't Greg know about that integration, right? On the portal, I search for what I want answers to. That all gets recurrated back to the pre-sales team, the sales team, and to your point, product marketing. What are they interested in? Think about it on the website, for example. You won't think, oh, this is what's hot for customers. And now all of a sudden, you find, well, that's interesting. We busted our hump to go do all this stuff over here. No one's looking for that, yeah. Right? They need me if you push it in front of their face. But if you allow them to search and they start looking at your partner strategy, your roadmap, how do you onboard? What's your support strategy? Now, guess what? They start asking questions about roadmap and support strategy. As a seller, they just ask some buying questions. That tells me I should really deeply engage with them and guide them through the process. And I think the feedback loop is incredible, right? In that area of who in the world is not advocated? You need to go out and talk to your customer. Okay, I do it every day. Tens of thousands of them every day. And the data flows back. We have a customer that's now using us for their education of analysts. 92 analysts follow this company, and they, instead of them having analyst day once a quarter, they now issue an O&M portal. The analysts come in. Guess what? The very first time this happened, they were like, holy mackerel. They all went to this section of the PowerPoint or this section of the demo. We didn't even know that analysts cared about that. And we did a poor job of that. The next analyst call, the next analyst portal that was launched, that was done much better. It gave them feedback. It made them aware of what the analysts are interested in. And they also were saying, hey, we also were able to push what we wanted the analysts to be interested in a non-obtrusive, kind of non-threatening, non-salesy way, right? Which is what it's all about. So yeah, I think that's a really excellent point that people forget about is the pursuit team and then the support of the pursuit team being knowledgeable and being able to share that content and information. Love it.
Yeah. Who are you seeing as your like typical customer? Does it skew more to larger businesses, more complex products, less product-led growth-oriented companies? What's the best ICP?
Where we get the most traction is in two areas. The first area is enterprise businesses. We're SaaS focused right now. We've had inbounds from other, but we're too small to go take care of financial services, CPG, et cetera. So focus on SaaS. But enterprise customers that sell into the mid-market or SMB, right? Because that's a more consumer buyer. It's product-focused much more than enterprise selling. It's very expensive, and your ACV is a lot lower. So the CAC costs are really, really important there. And, that buyer, right? Fundamentally, if you are a, let's just make this up, they're not a customer. Let's pretend, right? If you're selling, if you're DocuSign, you're selling to a real estate office. Everyone at office has a day job. No one has a title, go buy software. So our solution helps them to engage with them. 38% of all engagement of our O&M portals are done before 9, after 6 or on weekends. And I guarantee this is the 29th, Easter is Sunday. I guarantee that we'll have visits on Easter. People have a day job. We make it convenient for the buyer to learn about. So to your point, those big companies are trying to engage with that employee count of 1 to like 1,200 or 1,500. They really see a huge amount of benefit.
That's fascinating. The like before 9 and after 6 p.m.
Yeah.
And it's so true because I'm in meetings all day. When a vendor's like hassling me throughout the day. I'm like, I didn't have time for that. Like, I had to go and talk to my teams and sell myself.
Yeah, I'll just be polite. Nothing gets me more upset than I want to learn about a product. I go on, you know, their website and they say, you know, here's my calendar. Every Tuesday at 2 o'clock, we have a demo. Is that good for you? No, it's not good for me. How about Saturday morning at 9? The look on their face is like, what? What are you talking about? So I think that that's important. I think the next area is enterprise businesses. We have customers in this space that do sell that complex product, right? There's lots of moving pieces. There's a lot to be digested by the buyer before they can buy. You know, this helped because, you know, some sales cycles are 9-10 months. These portals stay open for 6 months and there's activity constant. And then I think the third area that we find is more walk-up business for us. And that is, you know, the startup, right? The 0 to 50, 0 to 100 employees. They want to scale and they can't afford to scale by hiring a full team. And this allows them to use the website to broaden their reach. And then this is really, it's really cruel. They hire one or two good people and those people now are servicing 100 prospects where they never could do that before. Right. So that's the area.
Yeah. I think there's, as you were talking about it before, especially in the startups who are going to market, there's often a lot of like category education and creation. And that is challenging to do, especially when you only have a few people to do it. And this is a really good way to do that. I mean, you can slightly gate the content with an email, but you can let people go and learn about the category and what you're doing to a greater degree.
Yeah. And we have a customer, I can say, I'm allowed to say their name, it's called Mercury Gate. They're in the transportation space and they start off on the website. About 60% of their demos, presentations, thought leadership is gated, 40% is not. And their philosophy is, listen, we're going to give you a lot to learn about. After you've consumed that, if you want to get deeper, give us your email address, because that's when they start scoring that behavior. And that score then turns into, should I assign a rep to go work with your company? And listen, it's not just OMDM. I mean, at the end of the day, the companies that are starting to be much more thoughtful of this person that you're trying to, quote unquote, sell to, the Gartner research said 75% of those people think the buying process is hard and frustrating. Well, why? Like, why do we do that? And I've been there too, right? 10 years ago, I was forcing you down to our sales process. And I think that it's going to change, right? And it's changing quickly, especially. You know, you brought this up a moment ago, you know, TikTok and YouTube. I have children in their 20s, all in the business world. And listen, there's no getting on the phone. There's no talking to anybody, right? My dad is 92 years old and every Friday they get pizza and he does it online on his phone. And I said, Dad, why don't you call? I said, Greg, I get misunderstood. They put me on hold. They always get the order wrong. I just go online. He's 92 and he's got a phone in his hand, you know, order the phone. And the bottom line is, it's much more convenient.
And it's easier. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's easier. Yeah.
It's pragmatic. Yeah. It's pragmatic.
Yeah. So let the seller be the guide and not the controller of all data. If you're a business today and your only way to order is via the phone, there'll be another store in your location next year because it's not going to be you.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's I think it goes back to what you just said at the beginning. The buying experience. It's up to you, the seller, to create.
Yeah.
And I think that's why these stats are so bad, because a lot of sellers, they're just asking me for time on something that I don't have a time for. I don't know. Each of us is getting a lot of these emails every day, right? And I'm asking myself, why are you asking me for 10 minutes, even though you know it's a lie?
Yeah.
That's the first red flag in selling clauses. Why you
only have one question and there's 10 minutes,
even though we know it's not 10 minutes. You know, even if the 10 minutes would be a right time, why are you asking me for my time without even offering anything? Like, I don't know you, and you know I'm busy as you are. Why you do it? And you know what?
Yeah.
If I would get this, you know, 1 out of 10 emails like this, no. It's other way around. I'm getting 9 out of 10 like this. I'm like, that's a bad experience.
Yeah.
Don't do this. Don't ask people for time if they don't have it without offering anything. So I'm telling my sellers, you got to act like someone who is helping people. It's not about asking for a meeting on the first occasion. No, nobody will do this. unless there is a disaster going on in the company and somebody's just like asking for, you know,
something immediately.
I need to survive. Just give me that. But that never happens.
I hear these great bluebirds, someone just dropped in my lap and they spent $1 million. That hadn't happened to me. If the three of us threw our credit cards on the table, we could build a multi-million-dollar business because cloud has made it affordable. But what that means is that 150,000 businesses are born every day. We used $50 million worth of AWS services. I don't pay $50 million for that, right? When I started Hype Heroes back in 2007, I had to go to Rackspace. And my biggest impediment to growth was the money to be able to afford a hosted solution for the big companies, right? That was reliable, that had, you know, had rollover, had data security, had disaster recovery, et cetera. That cost me a fortune. I left in my bills $1 million a year, right? In that infrastructure. I got more now and I don't pay that. And so what that's done though is that has created a ton of noise. And every one of them are emailing and every one of them are polluting your inbox. So we all just kind of look at all those emails and delete them all. And you have to be able to use your kind of company where you start to creating community around RevTech where the buyer can come to you and learn about different things you guys have thought was important. You've filtered down the market and I can learn about RevTech through you. And then if I have interest, I'll go to the website and I'll begin to learn more. And then if I reach out at that point in time, I'm a real buyer. Please don't put me in the SDR process where I was 7 months ago and ask me those three questions. I'm educated. I went to RevTech. I learned a lot. I went to Omidim's website or any other people you guys had profiled. I learned more. That's interesting. Let me call these two or three. I want more information. And then they put me through the gauntlet of the stupid process. Or I start getting the ridiculous gosh darn emails you just referred to. It says, hey, Greg, I need to ask you one question. And inside the email is 20. Right? We have a person on our team. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it infuriates him that this happens. And he'll send back notes to people going, first of all, you're asking me for office supplies. We don't have an office. You know, like just constant. But I hear your point. I just wonder, common sense should say 20 years ago, we did that because we were in control and the metrics were such that in order to get our bonus, we had to hit those MQLs or, you know, activity or email. New game now. New game. You know, those score the same.
Yeah. Thanks for validating what we're doing here. Because that's part of the intent of like, there's too much going on. There's too many companies, too many potential tools, too many silos in the go-to-market. Like, how do you start to do this? But I think your point about AWS is really interesting. And I think AI is doing the exact same thing. And so we're going to see we're already seeing it. I have so many companies that are something.ai. Now, some of them, we've had them on the podcast. They're incredible. They're great companies building with AI. A lot of them, I'm like, what's happening here? And so we're just going to keep seeing that. But on that point, you know, what you're doing with search, I'm sure there are AI implications. So I'm curious how you guys are thinking about the AI revolution in terms of your product.
Yeah, I'm cautious there because I talked to a good buddy of mine that runs a venture firm and he's like, Greg, it's raining AI. I got an umbrella. It was SaaS, then it was cloud, it was Y2K, right? Everyone's on the bandwagon because it's hot, right? And so we pragmatically look at the fact you saw our interface, right? That buyer is coming in and they're searching, right? So the first thing that we've done, predictive analytics is more than it is AI, machine learning, et cetera, is okay, a simple example, where I started looking at reporting. I know our engine will know you're going to also want to look at analytics, dashboards, customer reports, candidates, right? So I can begin to put that in front of you automatically. And then where AI comes in is, let's pretend you are a buyer coming in and you're looking for a solution and you're in the industry of construction. And we know that a new law was just passed in your region, and that's part of our content. I can serve that up to you, right? So now I become a thought leader using AI. So we think that the industry right now is focused 90%, 95% of the quote-unquote sales enablement, rev enablement, rev intelligence is, hey, let me tell the seller what to do next. Omidim thinks we can do it for them. right? I, based on search and based on AI, I can begin to understand that these are the patterns of a buyer. Let me put that in front of you, right? Let me help you buy, right? And I can begin to predict and answer three questions. Will they engage? Will they buy? The likelihood that they'll buy? And what do I need to do? What does the system need to do to increase that likelihood? And the holy grail, which it's in our lab right now, it's not ready for prime time, is what level of discount will increase the likelihood that they'll buy? Because everyone discounts just because. And it's not necessary. I bought a lot of things where if you didn't have to offer it to me, I would have bought it anyway, right? And yet, it's the go-to. So we have a great data scientist that did a startup in the higher ed space, and he answered two questions for higher ed. If your son or daughter is accepted to University of Pittsburgh, will they enroll? Big problem for the universities, right? Because who's going to enroll? And then will financial aid increase that likelihood? Same problem as B2B. Will they buy, and what's the price that will increase that likelihood? So that's what we're using AI. From that perspective, again, on that context of that base product of search, but being able to augment that buying experience with relevant, predictable things you'll want. Listen, there's a reason why milk is at the back of the grocery store. They know pattern-wise, Greg never leaves without something else in his hand, right? And it's always the stuff at eye level, and that's the highest margin. It's an experience.
I've never thought about that, and you are so right. No, I haven't. I'm just going through the world blind, apparently.
Yeah.
With the data that you have available, there's kind of endless opportunities for helping companies predict what they're doing. I think there's also a lot of partnership use cases. As you were talking before, this is great intent data, and I work for an account-based marketing platform, and it's like, okay, how do you start to augment that into your outreach, the ad you're serving based on the contacts that are coming in through the system? And so I'm curious, what partnerships have you invested in and seen be valuable? And are you seeing some of that of like the data in your platform getting pulled out to be enabled across other go-to-market strategies?
Yeah, that's where we see it, right? Yeah, we see, again, I mean, it's our customer's data, right? At the end of the day, right? It's their private secure portals of their opportunities, right? Tens of thousands of them. They know what's closed, what's lost, et cetera. And they can begin to farm that data back out and go, wow, that's interesting. Companies with 100 to 250 employees in the vertical of X, Y, and Z, we thought this was what made them buy. It actually is this over here. And you the makeup of a business, certain businesses are risk averse, right? Some want to be on the cutting edge. You learn that based on what people search for, what people, what drives that person from inquiry through buy. We map that, right? For the seller. But that's where businesses are starting, right, to get a little bit smarter on, some call it the modern seller, right? Somewhere looking at that cadence of what to do next. I think some of that's a fool errand. And I think a lot of their AI is being built on CRM data. And CRM data is stale, incomplete, and raw, right? Anyone that's ever been in a sales role puts whatever they want and whether they need to in the sales CRM system in order to keep their job for the quarter, and then they start over again, right? They do. Or they put information in that, that just masks what they're doing because they're afraid someone's going to poach their territory, right? So that data, building an AI model, we see a lot of bad AI, right? And there's going to be a lot more bad AI until it kind of, filters down into the legit stuff. Just like when the first, to your point of the buyer intent data, when those first systems, Bambora and Sixth Sense came out, right? A lot of it was erroneous, right? Now they're getting better at it. They've been in business for a long time, although the new, rules around third-party cookies are going to impact that dramatically. And so we look at ours as saying, you're in a portal, it's private, secure, that data becomes available. So
yeah, it's the first party data is obviously going to become more and more valuable.
Bingo.
For sure. We talked a lot of tools that are helping to automate the data that goes into the CRM, which I think is super helpful. And one of the things a lot of them say sometimes is like, and we let the salesperson edit it and it's not, and every once in a while, I'm like, don't let them edit it. Let's just actually see what's happening here. We'll probably get a better read on it than how a salesperson is going in. I think there's a balance there, but it's a good point around CRM data.
Yeah. I think there's plenty of room here to improve that process, especially if you have an AI that actually understands the intent of the conversation, right? So sometimes the reps just wrongly interpret the intentions on the buyer side, or they on purpose put some information that is maybe wrong. And I think the AI will just eliminate that. So
yeah,
with the volume of these calls and the conversations, I think that's going to happen.
Yeah. No, but you know, I think you're right, because I get 20, 30 emails a week from companies trying to sell me stuff around, you know, congratulating me on the success of third-party management. That was my previous company. Yeah, I was there 9 years, and yeah, I was a startup, and yeah, but I'm not there anymore. But AI went and got that, right? Because it's publicly available. It's on LinkedIn. They got it. They grabbed it, and you know, boom, now they run an email, and that immediately gets deleted, right? And you know, and some of the AI stuff, you can kind of tell that no one wrote that. I'm not game. But it's new, like any other tool in life, right? The more you use it, the more it gets refined to what, you know, it gets better at what it's doing, and you know where to point that tool. Not every tool, you know, we're not good for everything, right? I want to be, but we're not. Just like I said, we're not good for prospecting because no one's going to click on a link. I could, you know, verbose and tell you, oh, yeah, you can use this anywhere. That wouldn't be legit, right? That would be a little bit of, an email that's wrong. Why do that? Why bother?
Your product could inform prospecting and, like, what should you be talking about and what are, but it's not going to be the tool that helps do it beyond that.
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear in terms of, like, market trends, where are things heading? What are a couple of companies that you think are doing really cool things in the go-to-market tech space, whether it's competitors or tools that you integrate with or just tools maybe that you personally use that you're excited about?
We've been using G2. I think there's some good and bad, but at the end of the day, we found that gave us, you know, some good data, right, on what, at least what companies are in there. There are other ones that we're exploring that, you know, kind of compete with them. You know, obviously, we think HubSpot is our marketing automation platform, and I think that's gotten a lot better. We're a Salesforce, you know, CRM shop. But I watch a company, DocuSign, a lot because I think that they kind of went really great and they kind of had a little lull for a while. But I think now they're back on track of how to help the buyer, right? They're doing a lot of stuff around community, a lot of stuff around product-led growth. You know, I always use this, you know, this proxy and say that when Benioff and Salesforce came out with SaaS, it required two things: a different business model, perpetual to subscription, and on-prem to SaaS. Everyone thought overnight would happen. It took like 10, 15 years for companies to move to that. And I think the same thing with product-led growth, right? It's there are some companies that have found, some are no-brainers, Calendarly, right? Like all of them, 100% product-led growth. I think we are a bridge for companies to do that. So we see some companies are trying to go down that path, and we're interested in talking to that. But I think there are, you know, some companies are really starting to get their head wrapped around this, you know, much more different approach for go to market. But you know what? It's slow, right? I mean, you're going to a company. This happens all the time. I'll talk to someone on a Monday and they're like, oh my gosh, why did I think of that? Oh shoot, this is so simple. And then you talk to them on Friday and they're back to their old process again. And they're like, it's hard, Greg. I've been doing it for 20 years. Or you get some people, and I think they're, you know, just old school or whatever. Greg, that's ridiculous. You're going to put a digital platform in front of that. If I can get Lizzie on the phone, I can convince her to buy. I'm like, no, you can't. Like that those days are gone, right? And but yet, that's what's holding us back. And if you think about e-commerce, 20 years ago, everyone laughed. Buy online. My neighbor just bought a Tesla online. And he came to me and said, Greg, I bought a Tesla online. It took me like 5 minutes. When I buy SaaS software, it takes like 5 months, right? But we're much more comfortable now. And they, why? Because they looked at everything that added friction to the process and removed it. Like, look at what's that CarMax? Buying cars was traumatic. They figured, okay, I'll let you come in. No salespeople. Browse on your own because people hated the salesperson over their shoulder. And then, oh, I don't want to buy you. So I'm afraid of buying the lemon. Okay, you get 30-day money-back guarantee. Bring it back to your office, et cetera. They eliminated the friction. And I think if B2B doesn't eliminate the friction, they're out of business. Because e-commerce has shown us what can happen. The amount of business done on e-commerce, gosh, I buy more online than offline.
Yeah, I think we're at the beginning of a little bit of a revolution in go-to-market processes that's been going on for the last few years. And due to limited resources and macroeconomic effects and AI and all these things, we're going to start to see this process evolve. But to your point, not going to happen as quickly as any of us would like, but we'll get there eventually.
No, it will. Yeah. And the tell sign is, if you go look at the top 100 SaaS, I'm picking on SaaS public traded companies, and you look at their revenue, their operating costs are growing as faster. They're not making any money because when there's friction, right? Friction costs money, right? It costs time. It costs resources. It causes problems. The operating costs of some of the best companies in the world are just terrible. cap costs are a problem. If you look at a study done by Price Intelligence, I forget who they bought by Paddle or Poodle or whatever it was, right? They did a study that showed that over the last 5 years, cap cost is up 70%. That means you're putting more people, more technology to sell to the same buyer. And now the current data shows that the payback time for a SaaS 3-year transaction is 27 months. What happens if they churn? Get 8 months of profit on a 3-year deal because it costs you so much to sell it and they churn. One churn, right? You ruin 4 customers because that took that long to pay it back. Got to change, right? The economics are just not what they used to be. And the old adage of grow at all cost, done. No longer acceptable. Look at the rule of 40 on Wall Street's now starting to say you need efficient and effective growth. We're getting into an economic study now, but
it's important. It is important where this is going to go based on that, because this free money period is over.
Bingo.
Right. So people need to really shift their mindset towards something that is more effective and frugal, if you like, in terms of spending. Right. So what you said about a competition that will cost you a lot, people will start feeling it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these areas were siloed, they're just crowded. So yep. You can't have multiple winners that are going to stand on the podium, right? If you don't have the resources, you probably need to pivot into something else or be extremely, extremely effective with your spending.
Yep, on both sides of the equation. So I think what you guys are building is perfect timing, right? Because I think we all want to go to an unbiased, which is what you are, third-party resource, where people want to go and what they can afford and how they learn, right? Is what you guys have gone out and researched and found companies you think are interesting. Someone will look at it. Someone will look at this hour and say, not interested. Okay. Others will say, well, that's pretty. I never thought about that. Oh, cat cost. Geez, that no wonder, et cetera, et cetera. Right. I'll get some thought provoking ideas and then they'll look at other providers and go from there. So I think the timing is, it is good. I always tell my team, where do my buyers hang out? They're not on email and they're not taking cold calls. So let's go find out where they're hanging at.
I think a great place to end is something you said, which was friction costs money. And I'm going to start saying that anywhere and everywhere that someone will listen to me. So thank you so much for your time, Greg. This was a great episode to really think about go-to-market overall and learn a lot more about what you guys are doing.
Thank you. I appreciate the invite. It was a very engaging conversation and I'm glad we did it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.